Back with you on The Takeaway. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for Tanzina Vega this week. The new Netflix series Shadow and Bone follows an orphan teen named Alina Starkov, who suddenly discovers extraordinary powers that could change the face of her war-ravaged world. Like a lot of big-budget fantasy shows and movies, think Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings, Shadow and Bone immerses its audience in its fictional world, complete with new lands, new people, new creatures, and new languages.
Where did you learn how to speak Yeri like a native?
I speak six languages.
Fjärden, which I don't speak, is just one of the fictional languages created specifically for Shadow and Bone, which is based on Leigh Bardugo's best-selling young adult fantasy novels. And when places like HBO or Marvel need somebody to do that, construct a language from scratch, they often turn to this guy.
My name is David J. Peterson. I'm a language creator, and I've created over 50 languages for television shows and films in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's right. David has created a lot of languages.
Dothraki. High Valyrian.
Zadrizes Buzdaris Kosdaur.
Irathian. Castathan. Kinukaz. Sondi. Noleth. Shivaisa. Wodzvochen. Uvisi. Fjärden. Ravkin.
Before creating languages professionally, David had been creating them on his own for fun for a decade. If I were to ask you to say hello in Dothraki, what would that be?
Dothraki, you'd say Batsumaruon.
All right.
I started in 2000 when I was a sophomore at UC Berkeley. I just kind of happened upon it. And I hooked up with other language creators online and started to really learn the craft. And really, I just did it recreationally. And I expected that that would be the case, that I would only do it recreationally, you know, for the rest of my life. And I enjoyed it well enough, so that was fine for me. In 2009, the entire language creation community got an unexpected opportunity. The producers of Game of Thrones emailed the Language Creation Society out of the blue with no forewarning and asked if they could help create the Dothraki language. And so what happened was the Language Creation Society put together a competition. They announced it to language creators everywhere. I applied with many others, and I was the one who made it through the gauntlet.
When you're doing something like this for Game of Thrones, for Shadow and Bone, are you a linguist? Are you a creator? Like, how are you thinking about the structure of language? Are you operating just carte blanche in your head, or are you trying to adhere to some rules that you know from existing languages?
In terms of how it feels, you know, before I created languages, all I did was write fiction. And for me, the feeling is very similar. So it feels like you're just creating, like you're an artist. However, everything that I do is informed by, I mean, you know, I have a bachelor's and master's in linguistics. It's informed by what I know about language. Because what you're trying to do, especially when you're creating, a more or less realistic language, like I did for Game of Thrones, and like I did with Christian Talman to create the Fjärden language for Shadow and Bone, is you're trying to create something that is plausibly human. Because the people that you're creating these languages for, it may be in a fantasy setting, but they're real human beings. And so we try to create something that fits the setting, that's fun, that we enjoy, that's interesting, but that adheres to what we know about human languages.
Are there pitfalls to think about when you're doing this? I mean, I would imagine that you must think about not falling into racial or ethnic stereotypes, for example, or thinking about, I don't know, sounding like Western languages or non-Western languages. Like, how do you think through that part?
I think one of the key issues is that a lot of stereotypes about language have to do with sound, and they have really no basis in fact. There's this characteristic that a language that has a sound like "kh" is a harsh language, which is really bizarre, because then if you ask people, well, what are harsh languages to your ear? And they say things like, oh, like German and Dutch and Russian and Arabic. But what they don't realize when they say that is that this sound, like "kh", for example, it's found in both Spanish and French. But nobody describes those languages as harsh. And you begin to wonder why, and you realize, well, it's not actually the sound of it. It's something else going on. It's something that goes back to cultural and racial stereotyping. So when a language creator sits down to create a language, it helps to understand all the choices that you're making from the top down. Knowing that, first of all, that there is no connection between the sound of a language and the people who speak it. There's also no connection between the grammar of a language and the people who speak it. The connection that you see between culture and language, it comes through in the actual words that are there, both in the words that exist in the language, and that you're more likely to have a native term for things that exist in your life, and borrowed terms for things that you have borrowed. But also, culture peeks through in idioms and expressions and things like that. And there, you know, it makes sense to laser focus on the people you're creating the language for. Don't think that, you know, oh, these people are like, you know, X group or people who speak Y language in the real world. Forget that. Just think, here are these fictional people, and I'm going to use them as my inspiration solely, and I'm not going to think about anything else. Rather than thinking about other languages and being informed by them, just focus on linguistic science, what makes sense, you know, what is plausible for human language, and make those decisions for the language itself. But as long as you adhere to creating a unique vision, then you're going to end up with a unique language, and that's really the goal.
Why do you think that there's this interest or demand for this kind of sort of escape into another world right now? You know, why are you in such demand?
It's the same reason we like to travel. It's fun to see what life is like somewhere else. And, you know, when you go to a different country, it's such a huge sensory experience. When you're watching a TV show or a movie, you get a fraction of that. Like, you're not going to know what it smells like, what the air feels like. And so you have to work with the visuals and the audio. And I think what happened with not even Game of Thrones, I think before that, I think what happened with the Lord of the Rings movies is that when they used Tolkien's languages, it really helps you feel like this is somewhere that's totally different for two reasons. One, it's a language that, you know, doesn't sound like any other, which is achievable even with gibberish. But something that's unique about language that has structure, is that your brain can pick up on these repeated patterns, these intonational patterns that make something sound like a language as opposed to sounding like gibberish. Where gibberish is just random, language has patterns. And even if you can't understand the language, your brain can pick up on that. And so it makes a big difference when there's an authentically created language and it's used in the production to help flesh out that world. It makes it feel real. It makes it feel like being in another country. And so it just helps up the level of the realism of a show.
You know, you mentioned The Lord of the Rings, and I'm thinking, okay, Elvish was in the books.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something different about now, today, that has led to work like yours becoming more popular and more widespread?
It might sound like a simple explanation, but I think it's really true. I think it had to do with the popularity of Game of Thrones. Because if you look back at the, you know, constructed languages and TV and film, the first one was actually in Land of the Lost, which was a kid's show. Nobody was going to pay attention to that. But after that, it was like Klingon was created for the Star Trek movie. You have... Yeah. Lord of the Rings, which is a movie. You have Avatar, which is a movie, right? And movies are wonderful things. They make a huge splash and stick around for a few months, but then they kind of vanish from the public consciousness. Game of Thrones was a phenomenon for 10 years. It's something that did not fade from the public consciousness while it was hot. And so people were hearing the languages a lot more. There was just a lot more content, you know, in terms of hours. But also it didn't have that time to kind of like fade away. I think that really made an impression, not just on audiences, but also on writers and producers and directors who weren't able to kind of like see, you know, a phenomenon and then forget about it. It was constantly reminding them that a created language was another potential tool for them as they tried to bring their show to life. And really, I think that was enough to kind of allow it to hit in many other places.
Language is a living, breathing thing. Have you ever gotten, I don't know, a response from an actor who's like, listen, man, I just can't say that. Like, that's just too weird. Or I can't learn this particular turn of phrase. Do you ever tailor your work in response?
Believe it or not, that's happened very rarely. Very rarely. For the most part, actors are really excited about that because it gives them a tool to get into character, something that they don't have to invent on their own. It's like, here is this language that nobody's ever heard before, and this tells me that I am in this character. So most of the time, they react pretty well. Sometimes, like if an actor is struggling with a particular sound, it is very freeing to be able to say, well, I can just retranslate that and fix it so that that sound doesn't occur in that line. Sometimes if the word hasn't been used before, I can just change the word.
David J. Peterson is a language creator and author of the book, The Art of Language Invention. Thank you so much for being here.
Que rimbose.
Okay, what was that one?
That was High Valyrian.
Dracarys.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.